Chapter 2. Tyrants. Muttered the pirate colonel. Nay, my Redforth, said Alice, say not so. Call not names, my Redforth, or they will apply to Pa. Let 'em, said the colonel. I do not care. Who's he? Tinkling here undertook the perilous task of remonstrating with his lawless friend, who consented to withdraw the moody expressions above quoted. What remains for us to do? Alice went on in her mild, wise way. We must educate, we must pretend in a new manner, we must wait. The colonel clenched his teeth, four out in front, and a piece of another, and he had been twice dragged to the door of a dentist despot, but had escaped from his guards. How educate? How pretend in a new manner? How wait? Educate the grown-up people, replied Alice. We part tonight. Yes, Redforth, for the colonel tucked up his cuffs, part tonight. Let us in these next holidays, now going to begin, throw our thoughts into something educational for the grown-up people, hinting to them how things ought to be. Let us veil our meaning under a mask of romance, you, I, and Nettie. William Tinkling, being the plainest and quickest writer, shall copy out. Is it agreed? The colonel answered sulkily, I don't mind. He then asked, how about pretending? We will pretend, said Alice, that we are children. Not that we are those grown-up people who won't help us out as they ought, and who understand us so badly. The colonel, still much dissatisfied, growled, how about waiting? We will wait, answered little Alice, taking Nettie's hand in hers, and looking up to the sky, we will wait ever constant and true till the times have got so changed as that everything helps us out, and nothing makes us ridiculous, and the fairies have come back. We will wait ever constant and true till we are 80, 90, or 100. And then the fairies will send us children, and we will help them out, poor pretty little creatures, if they pretend ever so much. So we will, dear, said Nettie Ashford, taking her round the waist with both arms and kissing her. And now if my husband will go and buy some cherries for us, I have got some money. In the friendliest manner I invited the colonel to go with me, but he so far forgot himself, as to acknowledge the invitation by kicking out behind, and then lying down on his stomach on the grass, pulling it up and chewing it. When I came back, however, Alice had nearly brought him out of his vexation, and was soothing him, by telling him how soon we should all be 90. As we sat under the willow tree, and ate the cherries fair, for Alice shared them out, we played at being 90. Nettie complained that she had a bone in her old back, and it made her hobble, and Alice sang a song in an old woman's way, but it was very pretty, and we were all merry. At least, I don't know about merry exactly, but all comfortable. There was a most tremendous lot of cherries, and Alice always had with her some neat little bag or box or case, to hold things. In it that night was a tiny wine glass. So Alice and Nettie said they would make some cherry wine to drink our love at parting. Each of us had a glassful, and it was delicious, and each of us drank the toast, our love at parting. The colonel drank his wine last, and it got into my head directly, that it got into his directly. Anyhow, his eyes rolled immediately, after he had turned the glass upside down, and he took me on one side, and proposed in a hoarse whisper, that we should cut him out still. How did he mean? I asked my lawless friend. Cut our brides out, said the colonel, and then cut our way, without going down a single turning, bang to the Spanish main. We might have tried it, though I didn't think it would answer, only we looked round, and saw that there was nothing but moonlight under the willow tree, and that our pretty wives were gone. We burst out crying. The colonel gave in second, and came to first, but he gave in strong. We were ashamed of our red eyes, and hung about for half an hour to whiten them. Likewise a piece of chalk round the rims, I doing the colonel's, and he mine, but afterwards found in the bedroom looking glass not natural, besides inflammation. Our conversation turned on being 90. The colonel told me he had a pair of boots that wanted soling and healing, but he thought it hardly worth while to mention it to his father, as he himself should so soon be 90, when he thought shoes would be more convenient. The colonel also told me, with his hand upon his hip, that he felt himself already getting on in life, and turning rheumatic. And I told him the same. And when they said at our house at supper they are always bothering about something, that I stooped, I felt so glad. This is the end of the beginning part, that you were to believe most. Part 2. Romance. From the pen of Miss Alice Rainbird, aged 7. There was once a king, and he had a queen, and he was the manliest of his sex, and she was the loveliest of hers. The king was, in his private profession, under government. The queen's father had been a medical man out of town. They had 19 children, and were always having more. 17 of these children took care of the baby, and Alicia, the eldest, took care of them all. Their ages varied from 7 years to 7 months. Let us now resume our story. One day the king was going to the office, when he stopped at the fishmonger's, to buy a pound and a half of salmon not too near the tail, which the queen, who was a careful housekeeper, had requested him to send home. Mr. Pickles, the fishmonger, said, "Certainly, sir. Is there any other article? Good morning." Apostrophe, the king went on towards the office in a melancholy mood, for quarter day was such a long way off, and several of the dear children were growing out of their clothes. He had not proceeded far, when Mr. Pickles' errand boy came running after him, and said, "Sir, you didn't notice the old lady in our shop." Apostrophe, what old lady? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the king. "I saw none." Apostrophe, now the king had not seen any old lady, because this old lady had been invisible to him, though visible to Mr. Pickles' boy. Probably because he messed and splashed the water about to that degree, and flopped the pairs of soles down in that violent manner, that, if she had not been visible to him, he would have spoilt her clothes. Just then the old lady came trotting up. She was dressed in shot silk of the richest quality, smelling of dried lavender. "King Watkins the First, I believe?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old lady. "Watkins, apostrophe," replied the king, "is my name. Apostrophe, Papa, if I am not mistaken, of the beautiful Princess Alicia?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old lady. "And of 18 other darlings," apostrophe, replied the king. "Listen. You are going to the office," apostrophe, said the old lady. It instantly flashed upon the king that she must be a fairy, or how could she know that? "You are right," apostrophe, said the old lady, answering his thoughts. "I am the good fairy Grandmarina. Attend. When you return home to dinner, politely invite the Princess Alicia to have some of the salmon you bought just now. Apostrophe, it may disagree with her," apostrophe, said the king. The old lady became so very angry at this absurd idea that the king was quite alarmed, and humbly begged her pardon. "We hear a great deal too much about this thing disagreeing, and that thing disagreeing," apostrophe, said the old lady, with the greatest contempt it was possible to express. "Don't be greedy. I think you want it all yourself." Apostrophe, the king hung his head under this reproof, and said he wouldn't talk about things disagreeing anymore. "Be good, then," apostrophe, said the fairy Grandmarina, "and don't. When the beautiful Princess Alicia consents to partake of the salmon, as I think she will, you will find she will leave a fishbone on her plate. Tell her to dry it, and to rub it, and to polish it till it shines like mother of pearl, and to take care of it as a present from me. Apostrophe, is that all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the king. Don't be impatient, sir, apostrophe, returned the fairy Grandmarina, scolding him severely. Don't catch people short, before they have done speaking. Just the way with you grown-up persons. You are always doing it. Apostrophe, the king again hung his head, and said he wouldn't do so anymore. Be good, then, apostrophe, said the fairy Grandmarina, and don't tell the Princess Alicia, with my love, that the fishbone is a magic present which can only be used once, but that it will bring her, that once, whatever she wishes for, provided she wishes for it at the right time. That is the message. Take care of it. Apostrophe, the king was beginning, might I ask the reason? Apostrophe, apostrophe, when the fairy became absolutely furious. Will you be good, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she exclaimed, stamping her foot on the ground. The reason for this, and the reason for that, indeed. You are always wanting the reason. No reason. There. Hoity-toity me. I am sick of your grown-up reasons. Apostrophe, the king was extremely frightened by the old lady's flying into such a passion, and said he was very sorry to have offended her, and he wouldn't ask for reasons anymore. Be good, then, apostrophe, said the old lady, and don't. Apostrophe, with those words, Grandmarina vanished, and the king went on, and on, till he came to the office. There he wrote and wrote and wrote, till it was time to go home again. Then he politely invited the Princess Alicia, as the fairy had directed him, to partake of the salmon. And when she had enjoyed it very much, he saw the fishbone on her plate, as the fairy had told him he would, and he delivered the fairy's message, and the Princess Alicia took care to dry the bone, and to rub it, and to polish it, till it shone like mother of pearl. And so, when the queen was going to get up in the morning, she said, Oh, dear me, my head, my head. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and then she fainted away. The Princess Alicia, who happened to be looking in at the chamber door, asking about breakfast, was very much alarmed when she saw her royal mama in this state, and she rang the bell for Peggy, which was the name of the Lord Chamberlain. But remembering where the smelling bottle was, she climbed on a chair and got it, and after that she climbed on another chair by the bedside, and held the smelling bottle to the queen's nose. And after that she jumped down, and got some water, and after that she jumped up again, and wetted the queen's forehead. And, in short, when the Lord Chamberlain came in, that dear old woman said to the little princess, What a trot you are! I couldn't have done it better myself. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but that was not the worst of the good queen's illness. Oh, no. She was very ill indeed, for a long time. The Princess Alicia kept the 17 young princes and princesses quiet, and dressed and undressed, and danced the baby, and made the kettle boil, and heated the soup, and swept the hearth, and poured out the medicine, and nursed the queen, and did all that ever she could, and was as busy, busy, busy as busy could be, for there were not many servants at that palace for three reasons. Because the king was short of money, because a rise in his office never seemed to come, and because quarter day was so far off, that it looked almost as far off, and as little as one of the stars. But on the morning when the queen fainted away, where was the magic fishbone? Why, there it was in the Princess Alicia's pocket. She had almost taken it out to bring the queen to life again, when she put it back, and looked for the smelling bottle. After the queen had come out of her swoon that morning, and was dozing, the Princess Alicia hurried upstairs, to tell a most particular secret to a most particularly confidential friend of hers, who was a duchess. People did suppose her to be a doll, but she was really a duchess, though nobody knew it except the princess. This most particular secret was the secret about the magic fishbone, the history of which was well known to the duchess, because the princess told her everything. The princess kneeled down by the bed on which the duchess was lying, full dressed and wide awake, and whispered the secret to her. The Duchess smiled and nodded. People might have supposed that she never smiled and nodded, but she often did, though nobody knew it except the Princess. Then the Princess Alicia hurried downstairs again, to keep watch in the Queen's room. She often kept watch by herself in the Queen's room, but every evening, while the illness lasted, she sat there watching with the King. And every evening the King sat looking at her with a cross look, wondering why she never brought out the magic fishbone. As often as she noticed this, she ran upstairs, whispered the secret to the Duchess over again, and said to the Duchess, "Besides, they think we children never have a reason or a meaning." And the Duchess, though the most fashionable Duchess that ever was heard of, winked her eye. "Alicia," said the King, one evening, when she wished him good night. "Yes, Papa." "What has become of the magic fishbone?" "In my pocket, Papa." "I thought you had lost it." "Oh, no, Papa." "Or forgotten it." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.